the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking levels, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Well, as ready as I can ever be, I suppose. Welcome to a Wednesday. Oh, my goodness. We just seem to be going from, like, bad to worse. I don't know. The world is nuts. And today, we have the perfect guest for a day when I'm just so fed up that I believe the world has gone mad, and that is Digby. Heather Digby Parton, who was one of the original OG bloggers, one of the original progressive bloggers in the net roots. Back in the early 2000s, she was, you know, among the pioneers. And thankfully, she's still at it. Digby's hullabaloo these days is at digbysblog.net. That's how you get to it. Used to be a little more involved, but that's it now, digbysblog.net. And, you know, it's funny because every day I put up, you know, I make a graphic for the show that I try to make somewhat representative of the subject matter or the guest, or there's usually some correlation, not always, but usually. And today, the show card, for lack of a better term, is Howard Beale from Network, who's the guy who said, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore." And I know we may feel that way, but honestly, that's not the reason I used that today. The reason I did is because Digby used to have that picture of Howard Beale ranting on her old website. It doesn't appear on the new one, but it's still the perfect graphical representation of, you know, how I'm feeling right now. Oh my goodness. So I hope you had the chance yesterday to listen for, yes, and she's a writer for Salon as well. Thank you, Longshot Louie. Digby, in addition to her own blog at digbysblog.net, also writes a regular column for salon.com. So at least, you know, she's getting out there into the more mainstream. But wow, you know, what's really frightening is the way the polling is going, the numbers are going. I just read something about, let me see if I can't pull this up because I'd rather have the headline in front of me. A story in the LA Times, and it says, well, the headline is Biden's Dilemma. It's hard to sell a message when no one's listening. But buried in this LA Times article, it says, I'm just going to read it to you rather than paraphrasing. First, the Harvard Youth Poll, which the university's Kennedy School Institute for Politics has conducted for two decades, showed that young people, much like the electorate as a whole, have grown less supportive of President Biden and his party. Second, a poll on voter attitudes towards homelessness in Los Angeles highlights the mounting frustrations many voters feel, as well as their disappointment with the region's political leadership, nearly all of them Democrats. I'm still not finding the thing that I wanted. Biden's job approval rating among 18 to 29-year-olds. This is, you know, these are the people who were reliably Democratic. Well, it's sunk to 46%. It says Democrats, Republicans, and independents each have soured on the president by similar amounts. Lovely. But this is the part I was getting to. One group stands out, however. Biden's job approval rating among young Latinos has dropped by 21 percentage points. 21 points. This is frightening. This does not bode well. And I'm not going to go into the I told you so's, because that doesn't do any of us any good. But it's not good. And we're fighting this uphill battle. And then on the other side, you have these serious nut jobs. Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar and Lauren Boebert and the rest of that, Louis Gohmert, and it gets worse and worse when you go down the line. But they're getting more and more empowered. Let me see if I can't find this. I had it. I pulled up that article. That's why it's not here. So Matt Gaetz had a press conference, I guess, today with Marjorie Q. Greene and Paul Gosar, the killer dentist. I hate to run his voice. Let me just read to you some of what he said and see if it doesn't send chills up your spine. These are quotes from Matt Gaetz, the guy who's, there's evidence that he has transported underage women across state lines for the purpose of them having sex with older men. Why is he still in Congress? Why has nothing happened to this man yet? Why is he still allowed on the public stage to spew shit like this? Like this quote. We are going to take power after this next election. When we do, it's not going to be the days of Paul Ryan and Trey Gowdy and no real oversight and no real subpoenas. It's going to be the days of Jim Jordan, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Dr. Gosar, and myself. Be afraid. Be very afraid. I'm going to play the audio. I'm warning you. It's disturbing.
We are going to take power after this next election. And when we do, it's not going to be the days of Trey Gowdy and no real oversight and no real subpoenas. It's going to be the days of Jim Jordan and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Dr. Gosar and myself doing everything to get the answers to these questions.
I thought this was a different clip, but Yahoo News has this clip posted a number of times with various reactions from the Twitter machines. Like somebody posted that video, somebody named Elizabeth McLaughlin, and said, when they show you who they are, believe them. A dissident is here, posted that video and wrote, a nightmare scenario that should send us all screaming to the polls. Fred Wellman said, there is the message. These toxic monsters are our future. And Dilemmi said, this is the funniest SNL skit I've seen today. You know, it's easier to think of it in those terms and to laugh at it and poo-poo it. But we are past the point of laughter. This is dangerous. We are living in really dangerous times. And what frightens me is that, we mentioned this yesterday with Laffy, the fierce urgency of now. Where is it? Because it certainly doesn't seem to be a thing among Democratic Party leadership. Now, I've got to say, they actually got some work done yesterday in the House anyway. So, but it's all upside down and backwards. You know where I'm going with this, right?
Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, Opposite World.
It is Opposite World. So the House last night did two things. One, the debt ceiling, which we're about to hit like a week from today. It looks like that's been taken care of. How, you ask? With Mitch McConnell being, I'm not helping those Democrats at all. They can have to do it all by themselves. Well, that was impossible. As long as the filibuster stands, and now it's used on every bill. It used to just be used occasionally. Now they use it on every single piece of legislation. So that means you need 60 votes. And it's not even a real filibuster because nobody's, you know, made to stand on the Senate floor and talk until, you know, they drop, which would quickly put an end to the filibuster, by the way. They really just need to return to the talking filibuster, but I digress. What they did was Mitch McConnell said, okay, we're going to give you a one-time pass so that you, Democrats, can pass the debt ceiling increase with a simple majority vote. Hint, that's the way it's supposed to be. That's how it works in a democracy. Majority rules. And that's how the Senate was set up, the same way the House is. The House operates with a majority. Majority wins. You need 218 votes to pass something in the House because that brings you over the halfway mark of 435. Got it? But in the Senate, it used to be you just needed 51 votes to pass a bill. Well, now you need 60 because of something that doesn't appear anywhere in the Constitution. And Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin think it's protecting democracy? That's opposite world. All right. So what the deal that McConnell and Schumer struck is it's Orwellian. It's just ridiculous. So I think today they're going to have a vote on a procedural motion. The motion is to, and it's like a cloture thing, except it's not cloture because they're not going to filibuster. This vote is to say we will let the Democrats pass the raising of the debt ceiling by a simple majority. But to pass that, they need 60 votes. So they need 10 Republicans to get on board. So Mitch McConnell is somehow receiving the ire of many of his colleagues. We don't want to raise a finger to help those Democrats raise the debt ceiling. Meanwhile, the only reason that the debt ceiling needs to be raised right now is to pay the bills that Donald Trump ran up when he put through $2 trillion worth of tax cuts for the wealthiest among us. Got it? I mean, we just watched this thing on Alanis Morissette last night, and I got to say, isn't it ironic, don't you think? A little too ironic, I really do think. So it'll take 60 votes to pass this one-time bill that says we will let the Democrats raise the debt limit using a simple majority. But they need 60 votes in order to make that happen. It just makes no sense. If they didn't do anything at all and they didn't filibuster the bill to raise the debt ceiling, all they would need is 51 votes. So I don't understand the extra step. But that's, you know, how the Senate works or doesn't, as the case may be. So that happened. Then it goes, so it's got to go. So it passed in the House, but now it's got to go to the Senate with this machination that makes no sense. But I guess they're going to get it done. The other thing that the House passed last night is the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. This is the military spending bill. And the House of Representatives authorized last night $768 billion to be handed over to the Department of Defense. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but we ended a 20-year war in Afghanistan this year. Wouldn't you think our war funding should go down a little bit? Because we don't need as much because we're not occupying Afghanistan any longer. But the funding for the Department of Defense went up. They, even Congress, gave Joe Biden something like $20 billion more or more than that, more than he asked for. And by the way, that $768 billion is more than double the amount it would have been for a one-year period for the Build Back Better bill if they had left it at that $3.5 trillion level. You see the hypocrisy here? So we've got unlimited funds to bomb the world, to go kill people on all corners of the planet. But to take care of people here at home, to provide free preschool for children so that their parents could go to work, we can't afford that. To provide paid family leave when there's a new baby or an elderly parent or someone else who needs care at home. Like every other country in the world. Every other industrialized, modern, you know, power in this on this planet does. Everyone but us. All because Joe Manchin says, oh no, paid family leave? That's a handout. Yeah. And the thing is, and then to make matters even worse, yes, Bernie did vote against the NDAA, as you knew he would. But talk about strange political bedfellows. There was a one funding provision in the NDAA, which is a $650 million weapons sale to Saudi Arabia. And Bernie Sanders joined forces with, are you sitting down? Rand Paul and Mike Lee, and fought against this, but it went through anyway. So again, I don't ever want to hear again that we can't afford to feed those among us who are hungry, to provide universal health care for the people of this country. Oh, we don't have that money. We're a poor nation. We're only the wealthiest nation on the planet in the history of the world. Yet we can't afford those things. But you need money for bombs to go wage war on the rest of the world? No problem. We got you covered. Hey, we'll give you $500 billion more than you wanted in the first place. It is just wrong. Just totally wrong. So that's why, you know, it's like, thank goodness Digby's on today, because she gets it and we can have these discussions. And then, and that's why the Howard Beale, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. The other part of that is we should all be in that place. Because did you read that article? I posted it yesterday at The Atlantic from Barton Gellman. He made the rounds on the cable TV shows yesterday. If you haven't read it, please do. There's a link on yesterday's blog post where I posted yesterday's show. If you can't find it anywhere, that's at NicoleSandler.com/12-7-21 yesterday. Read it. It's long, but it's worth reading, because the old saying, be afraid, be very afraid. Well, there's a reason you need to be afraid, because as bad as things may be now, they're about to get immeasurably worse. And, you know, here's the other part. This Joe Biden's polling numbers falling. He's now at like 40%, down 2 from last month. There was just a study, I think it was NPR did the study, and they're finding that the mainstream corporate media coverage of Joe Biden is more critical of Biden than they were of Trump. But they have this, you know, this other both-siderism thing going on, where they try, you know, they're talking about today's Republican Party as if it is a legitimate counter to the Democratic Party. You know, look, love the Democrats or hate them. And right now I'm kind of in the hate them mode, but I despise the Republicans because they are not in the business of governing. They're not trying to make things better. They're just trying to seize total control of power, all the while telling you that we're the ones trying to seize power. It's the gaslighting of America, and it's working for them. And we all know it. We're all talking about it openly. You hear pundits on TV, to columnists, to David Brooks just wrote something about what this Republican Party has turned into and what they're capable of. And now people a lot smarter than I am are openly warning the world. We're looking at the end of democracy. We are looking at the end of this experiment. They called it an experiment. Well, I guess maybe 250 years or thereabouts, maybe the limit. I don't know. And I'm trying not to be defeatist. And here I will do it. I told you so. I told you that Joe Biden was the wrong choice. If only, and look, I hate the whole age thing, and it's not blanket. It doesn't hold. If Bernie Sanders got in, I don't think he'd be hemorrhaging the support of the young people. But then again, if Bernie Sanders got in, I can pretty much guarantee you that as part of the infrastructure package that's going through, it probably wouldn't be called Build Back Better, but who knows. As part of that massive package, it wouldn't have, I just lost my train of thought. Thanks, David. Hold on one second. It would have given us Medicare for all. It would have included paid family leave. It would have provided relief for college loans. It would have done the things that they promised to do during the campaign. I think a lot of the problem with Biden's hemorrhaging numbers is that he made a whole lot of promises during the campaign that he is not following through on. Whether it's his fault or not, you know, it's easy to blame Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, but you know, Harry Truman had an old saying, the buck stops here. Donald Trump didn't know what that meant. Joe Biden does. And he's blowing it. Okay, David, my husband is on the line. Yes, David.
Hi, darling.
Hi.
You mentioned something that I had been thinking of earlier today.
Yeah.
And that is, why is the press coverage of Biden more critical than it was of Trump? And I hate to give the media an excuse because I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I think the answer is that there's there was an expectation that Biden would be competent. There was an expectation that Biden would get things done. There was an expectation that Biden wouldn't shit the bed. And starting with the fiasco in Afghanistan, that's pretty much exactly what he's done. He's shown that he has no control over the members of his own party, that, again, this whole thing in Afghanistan that he had to have anticipated because he knew it was on the books before he ever walked in the door as president. And that was just a total, total shit show. And that was what really started the harshly critical coverage that he was getting. And again, I hate to give the media an excuse for it, but I think that's what it is. They had higher expectations for Biden because of the fact that their expectations couldn't have been lower for Trump because they knew what a fucking clown he is.
Well, but yes. And the thing is, I don't begrudge them being critical of the president. That's the job of the media. As long as it's warranted, you report the facts. I'm not saying all of them do it, but some do. The problem I have is they're covering today's Republican Party as if that's a legitimate counter to the Democrats. It isn't. We are dealing with some wholly new kind of, not wholly H-O-L-Y, but W-H-O-L-L-Y, a new creature that is taking us over the cliff to fascism. That is, build Donald Trump up to be their dear leader, and they will do what he says at any cost. And that's not a legitimate political party in our kind of democracy. And they won't call it out. Yep.
Without question. But I think a lot of that also has to do with the fact that the media is hedging their bets, knowing that if these people do take over, they're going to want access to them. And that if they're too critical of them, they won't get that access.
Yeah. Well, always. And it's always about access. But
and you know what? Shame on them.
That's
for
right.
Taking that posture. Shame on them.
Shame on them.
They have a job to do and they should do it. And if they don't have the access, then what they should do is write the truth from outside of the bubble, if you will, that they would not be able to get into.
You're right. Okay, David, I'm going to run because I got to get Digby on the line.
Go on with your bad.
Okay.
Love you, Matt.
Love you too. Bye. All right. Yeah, that was my husband. All right. So with no further ado, I think we need to hear from Digby. So I've got my dialing music, such as it is. Not really music, but you know what I mean. I think it's doing it again. Her intro will not play from this machine. Isn't that weird? Okay, hold on. Now that's pissing me off. I'm going to try to do it. You know, I always have to do things the difficult way, don't I? Oh, I don't want to do it that way. Sorry. Let me find her open here somewhere. Daily. I have my own kind of filing system here. While I'm looking for this, let me just tell you. Oh, God. All right. I'm not really taking calls now. Hi, who's this?
Hey, it's Josh. I'm calling from Miami.
Hey, Josh. What's up? What's on your mind?
I'm curious. You were talking about the Defense Authorization Act.
Yep.
And I was wondering, we hear all the time about how one senator can put legislation on hold. Why couldn't Bernie or anybody else, Mike Lee, have put this on hold? Why do we have to go through this amount of craziness? It should be pretty straightforward. Am I missing something?
You know what? I don't know the answer to that, but I will ask Digby because she probably does. So I'll ask her. Or I'm going to get
walking around irate all the time, Nicole, and it's just, this is so frustrating to me.
Oh, you and me both. And we have the extra added bonus of being here in Florida, where moron death sentence now wants to build his own private army of brown shirts that answers only to him. It gets from weird to worse.
It's a nightmare, and yeah, it just doesn't seem like the people on the left are fighting hard enough or taking it as serious as we should.
That's how I feel. Like, what? Where are they? They need to get off their asses and do something already. But
you're right. This is opposite world. You're absolutely right. It's bizarre.
It is. It makes no sense. And we all see it. Everybody's talking about it. The fact that this, you know, that we are on this, it was a slow motion coup. Well, it's not so slow anymore. And it's happening. We're staring at this. And another phrase I use, we're really fucked and not in a good way. Something's got to happen, right?
No doubt. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It's maddening.
It is.
But thanks for being out there, and I appreciate you bringing it up.
You got it. I will ask Digby. I'll ask her and see what she says. Thank you for calling, and nice to know you. We've got some people down here in South Florida listening. All right, you take care. All right, now I believe I have Digby's intro here, if it will let me play it. Let's see.
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
Ah, and I think she's there. Hey, Digby. Hello? Uh-oh. She appears to be there. Uh-oh. Digby's not hearing me. Digby, you there? I hate it when this happens. It should be working. Okay, I'm going to try. you know, best laid plans and all that stuff. I'm going to try to call her from a different number. Let's see if this works. Because, you know, what else do we have to do today? I see someone is mad in the chat room and says we're dumping on Biden. You know, there's the thing called tough love. And I look, at the beginning of his administration, I was praising him. I was saying how he needed to have a chance. The thing is, and it's not only him. It is, hold on, I got to type in the phone number here. Let's see, to see if this will work. I have no idea. All right, let's try to call Digby this way. Will this work? I guess we'll find out. Call. Oh, shoot. There we go. All right. It's one of those days. All right. Now it's ringing. Hopefully Digby will answer there. We'll talk to her. I don't know what's going on. Too ringy dingy.
Thank you for calling. Please leave a message.
Uh-oh. Well, that doesn't sound like Digby. I wonder, maybe I called the wrong number. All right. We're going to hang up on that one. I have no idea. Let's see. I got a different number I can call her at. I'm sorry. This is, you know, figures, best laid plans and all that stuff. Where's the other number? Okay. Let's try this number. We'll see if this one works. All right. Always fun. We are trying to reach Digby. But anyway, back to, it's not Bash Biden Day. It's, can't we get our elected officials to do the jobs they were elected to do? And this isn't working either.
Hello?
Oh, Digby. Hey, it's Nicole.
Hey, Nicole.
I know. How I'm calling. Good. I called on the other number that it somehow wasn't working. I don't know. I'm having one of those days.
I'm so sorry. I don't know what's going on with it.
It's probably on my end. You know, I have gremlins here. And I'm having one of those days. So anyway, better. I'm glad we connected. Thank you for being there and for joining us.
My pleasure.
So I started the show today with a bit of a rant about how everything seems to be sort of falling apart, that I'm looking at Biden's approval numbers and the polls, the numbers are going down. I just read a piece that was in the LA Times about his approval rating among Latinos has dropped by like 21 points. And I saw another report that said Latinos are split 50-50 now between Democrats and Republicans. I'm really, really concerned. And I think part of the reason that people are tuning out his message is that he hasn't come through with the things that he promised during the campaign.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you're right. I'm sure that's what it is. I think he's also got some serious, serious issues with a media that seems determined to present the economy as, you know, much, much worse than it actually is.
Yep.
I think that has had a huge effect on his approval rating.
It's not only about the economy, though. The media is much harder on him. We're hearing new reports. I think there was a study that NPR did. Media is harder on him and his administration than they were on Trump.
Well, there was a much discussed article by none other than Dana Milbank, of all people.
Yes.
Who, you know, I mean, you can't find a more establishment beltway journalist than him. And he was sounding the alarm, having looked at, I think, the report you're referring to, which showed that Biden, at this point in his term, is getting much harsher treatment than Trump did at this point in his term, and certainly much harsher treatment than Trump was getting a year ago, which is shocking because, you know, we don't know what was going on a year ago. I mean, it was Trump. I think he was running around just having recovered from exposing 500 people or more to COVID.
Oh, my. Including the elderly Joe Biden, who he stood on a stage with him just feet away from him without wearing a mask on the honor system because they arrived late. He didn't have to take a test. Well, they did that because he was positive for COVID at the time.
Of course. Of course, and I think we all kind of suspected it. I mean, you know, the fact that he turned up positive just a few days later, everybody went, well, geez, I mean, did he must have had it when he was at that debate. And I have no doubt in my mind that he knew. I mean, I read the Mark Meadows book, actually.
I read
that one. I know, it's shocking. I had to write about it, so I thought, well, I'll read it. And believe me, it's not a tough read. But he, you know, he talks about it at great length in his book about what Trump was very sick when he went to that debate. It was obvious. Meadows talks about it. He had bloodshot eyes. He was dragging. He was tired. And he had been that way for some days. They had that positive test and then sort of a funky negative test, or so they say.
On an antigen test, which is much less accurate than the first test he took. The antigen test is for after you've had COVID to see if you've developed any antibodies, not for while you're sick.
Of course. And, you know, and he didn't have any antibodies. It is just hitting his system. So, of course, he didn't have any yet. And he was, you know, they didn't do a real PCR test until days later after he had exposed. Well,
hundreds of people.
More than two dozen people came down with the virus that were in his close circle during that period. And the Washington Post did that report that showed that, you know, that 500 plus people were exposed to him up close and personal with him knowing. And, you know, of course they knew. They knew he had it. I mean, give me a break. He's dragging himself around. He's got bloodshot eyes. He can barely move. He's, you know, got muscle weakness. He's doing all this stuff. And they go, oh, no. And he had a positive test. And they go, oh, no, he's fine. He's just under the weather. I mean, that's ridiculous. And, of course, we know what happened. And you know, that I'm absolutely sure that he and Meadows both knew that it was highly likely that he was exposing Joe Biden to the virus. I have no doubt that Donald Trump knew that and was purposefully, you know, more than willing to do that. He worried, you know, possibly worried about his own health and saying, well, I'm going to take him down with me. I just have no doubt that that happened. So, you know, that was what was going on a year ago at this point. This year, to get back to your question, you know, Biden is dealing with, you know, the pandemic is still continuing largely because of sabotage on the part of the Republicans and their voters refusing to get vaccinated. And, you know, I mean, they've done, you know, everything they can to get vaccines into people's arms and they just won't take them. And you have this economy, which is actually doing quite well, but you've got the press saying that they're not. Now, Biden did manage. I mean, it is true that he's been unable to get Build Back Better passed yet because we know why. They passed it in the House.
Yep.
Joe Manchin essentially is what's holding it up. And voting rights and various other things that we're, you know, desperately needing to get done and are being held up largely because of the filibuster and one or two Democrats who are, you know, and perhaps a handful more that are just being chicken and won't come out and admit that they're doing it. But he did get the big, big bill passed when he first came in, which was the American Relief Act.
Right.
But he's
not getting credit for it. And part of it might be that he's not Donald Trump going out there every day and saying, I'm the best forever for you name for the African-Americans. I'm the best for the Latinos. I did the best job in Puerto Rico. I'm the best at everything. When he most clearly is not and has not. And Joe Biden is being more humble. And yet, I guess it takes being the asshole, patting yourself on the back, even when you don't deserve it, to get that message out there. We're an opposite world. Nothing makes sense anymore.
It doesn't. And you know, I really think you're onto something there, Nicole. I mean, I think maybe what's happened, and it isn't just Donald Trump, although he's the king of that particular dynamic, which is to just go out and just brag constantly. I mean, blatantly, no holds barred, blame everybody else for all of your problems, take credit for everything
that's gone well,
and just brag that you're the best and the greatest and whatever. And he's the king of that. But, you know, we see that quite a bit in our culture. He's not the only one. And I just have a feeling that, you know, this is one situation where Joe Biden sort of having a more old-fashioned kind of, you know, the take about, you know, being humble and, you know, giving credit to everybody and doing all those sorts of things. These are things which I also find appealing in people. I'm, you know, I'm an older person too, and I grew up sort of thinking that was the way that mature people did. You didn't go out there and just, you know, just blatantly just brag constantly, and it drove me nuts about Trump. But I have a feeling that that really is what it takes. And it's a salesman trick, which Trump has and Biden doesn't, which is just repeat things over and over again. Now, Biden does repeat himself, but he doesn't do it in that way, that kind of, you know, he says stuff. It's more of a vague philosophical thing, like there's nothing America can't do if we put our minds to it. Well, that's nice. I like that good rah-rah feeling. That's terrific. But that's not the same as coming out and saying, I've done this economy is the greatest economy since, you know, since time began.
And I built it. I alone built it, right? I did it. It was all me.
I did it. It couldn't have been you. And that other guy, that other guy couldn't have even done half of what I've done. You know,
and you know that. You know that better than I do.
Right. I mean, that, and somehow or another, as jarring and garish and revolting that all that stuff sounded 5 years ago when he first came on the scene, and we were just kind of, whoa, you know, I mean, it's not like politicians are really, you know, all that humble, you know, generally speaking.
No.
I mean, you know, they like to, you know, talk about their accomplishments, et cetera, et cetera. But we'd never seen anything like Trump. that kind of just revolting in your face kind of, you know, projection and, you know, tell me, you know, yeah, you want, you know, tell me I'm wrong. You know, come on. No, you want to fight, you know, I mean, that kind of thing. But now I think maybe for a lot of people, especially in the press, in order to get attention, that's kind of, they've been sort of trained now to think that that's the way that you do it. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, and I hadn't actually thought of it that way till you just said it, but it rings true to me.
Yeah.
That maybe it's a stylistic problem as much as anything else, and it's a kind of a creepy thing. If this is the new way of doing things, it's going to be rough for me because I really hate it.
You and me both. Well, because we're, you know, we are thinking, you know, critical thinking human beings. And so, you know, we're not, neither one of us, not that the Democratic Party gives out talking points, although they may, they just don't send them to us. I think
gotten one in years.
No, I've never gotten one. And if I got one, I'd probably look at it and say, all right, they're delusional, and toss it and say what I think anyway. You know,
exactly.
And if you listen to these compilation tapes that have been edited together from right-wing media, they say the same things from host to channel to host to channel in even the same exact vernacular, the same words, because they read it off the paper. And so they are reinforcing that message over and over and over again. It's the bottom. It's what is underlying all advertising. That's why you see commercials repeated over and over again, because I don't know what the statistic is, but something like you have to hear something 8 times before you even recognize it. And then you need to hear it another dozen times before the message sinks in. And they're using that. And we're too sophisticated for that.
I think so. And, you know, and I think that what we're not recognizing about all that is that, and that may work for you and me. I mean, we read all these things, you know, every day. I'm sure you have a full list of stuff that you go down and you check in every day. And read the New York Times and do all that. I mean, that's our job and also our interest and our passion. But for most people, they have lives and they're leading, you know, they've got a whole bunch of other interests. And they check in to just sort of check in the headlines. And if there's something going on, some kind of a scandal or a world event or a war or something happening, they may tune in more with more focus. But the day-to-day politics, the kind of things that, you know, are happening in terms of what Joe Biden is trying to do, for instance, and trying to enact legislation and, you know, dealing with Joe Manchin and the filibuster and, you know, all gerrymandering and all these things, which are sort of arcane kind of political issues that aren't necessarily related to something specific. I think a lot of people just roll their eyes at that. And it's always been difficult for Democrats in that way. Because they are interested in actual legislation. I mean, Republicans aren't. They don't actually want to legislate. They want to tear things down. They're not trying to do anything other than, you know, enact some tax cuts for rich people. So, you know, it's a different thing for Democrats, and it's always difficult to convey these things. But I have to say, you know, I mean, you brought up this thing with Hispanic.
Yeah.
With the Hispanic vote. I don't know what to think about those polls, and I'm going to have to see more, I think, before I believe that, but I see those specific numbers. But it's absolutely true that a large, you know, number of, you know, faction of the Latino population voted for Donald Trump.
Yep.
And, you know, places like Texas and Florida, you know, large populations. Now, it didn't happen so much here in California, where I live. Different group of, you know, I mean, it's not a monolith, right? I mean,
right.
Latinos are different wherever they live. But this is, it's a very, you know, this is a an interesting, and I don't want to say concerning, because, you know, these are all people with agency. They have a right to vote for whoever they want. But I don't think that they are, I don't think they're making a decision that's going to benefit them as Hispanic people by becoming Republican. I mean,
no.
I understand on certain culture war issues and various things like that, that they're, you know, and maybe even some economic issues where they have a sort of affinity for Republicans, but I think they're really underestimating the hostility within the Republican Party among the really hardcore Republican base, which is white. It is not Hispanic. It's not black. It is white as white can be.
That's right.
That the hostility toward Latinos as an ethnic group is, it's overwhelming. And, and maybe they were able to cover that up in some way. It's hard for me to imagine. Maybe they just thought it was all some kind of a game. But I think they're making an error in judgment if they're failing to see that regardless of whatever sort of philosophical affinity they may have for what the Republican Party pretends to be, what it really is an emerging authoritarian, neo-fascist political movement that is not their friend and is really, really not their friend.
Exactly.
So this is going to be very interesting to see how this unfolds and quite concerning to me on their behalf. Because I think that there's going to be some real problems for them.
You think?
Being Republicans.
Right. Yeah. You know, at least down here, you know, in the last election when we saw Miami-Dade County, which is allegedly blue, went for Trump or came very close. And the Hispanic population there big time flipped. What we realize is there is a lot of Spanish language radio down here.
Yep.
That nobody seems to be monitoring. When I say nobody, I mean nobody in the Democratic Party seems to be monitoring them. And it's as bad as Fox and Newsmax and OAN are. Put that on steroids and say it all in Spanish, and it goes on the radio down here. And these people are in a frenzy. They've got them all freaked out about socialism. Like it's Venezuela. Instead of Denmark,
right.
And these people, I think the internet has made people lazy. It should put everything at your fingertips. So when you hear something that doesn't sound quite right, you can search it and do your research and fact check yourself. But people don't. They're just like, oh, somebody said it. It must be true.
That's absolutely right. And, they do hear, the word socialist, which, of course, in the American context, really doesn't mean what people think it means,
no.
Democratic socialist like Bernie Sanders or whatever. But, these people coming into it from an immigrant standpoint, it's a very easy kind of a layup for the Republicans to use that and to sort of, trigger all these kind of intrinsic sort of fears that these people have coming from immigrant countries where socialism, or now they're not even saying socialist anymore. They're just calling Democrats communists.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is. He's saying, they're all a bunch of communists. I mean, I feel like we're back to the 1950s here with that stuff. I mean, what is that? Where's that coming from?
Well, I know exactly where it's coming from. Did you hear? So yesterday, this is a total non sequitur here, but you'll hear the connection in a moment. Biden's nominee for controller of currency or something like that was an immigrant from Kazakhstan. And, when I hear Kazakhstan, my ears perk up because that's where my daughter is from. And so, but she's older. She was born there during the Soviet, when it was part of the Soviet Union. And she went through school there. Well, what's his name? John Kennedy. I guess I have a hard time using that name with that man from Louisiana. John Kennedy, I thought I had the clip here, but I don't, was, he's like, I don't know if I should call you a professor or comrade. And he went into, so were you a member of this young communist club? And she said, every child who grew up in the Soviet Union was. You're automatically in it until you age out of it. He said, well, I want to see your letter of resignation. She's like, there is no such thing. You just sort of age out of the program. Well, I want you to go through your records. And finally, Sherrod Brown, who chairs the committee, said, ugh, I don't often interrupt, but you got to stop this. This is insane. And the whole comrade thing, I was waiting for someone to say, have you no decency, sir?
Well, somebody did in the background say, and I think it was, what's her name, Tina Smith from Minnesota, who said, oh, my, or no, she, they thought she said something like, oh, my God, and she ended up clarifying, and she said something like, you know, what the hell, in the background when he was saying that.
Yep.
Now, first of all, let me just say that John Neely Kennedy is a 100% full-blown cornpone phony.
Phony. He's Harvard educated, right?
Yeah, I mean, he went to Oxford, and he was a Democrat up until, you know, fairly recently, like 2008 or something.
Wow.
He was known as kind of, you know, I mean, of course, he's from Louisiana, so he was more conservative maybe than we might like, but still, he was a Democrat. Decided that his future was there, and turned himself into Foghorn Leghorn. He didn't talk that way.
No, he wasn't this old. I don't know
whether to call you a comrade or professor, you know. And I'm going, what the heck? And this isn't the guy. He's full of all this stuff. Well, that must really suck. You know, he says stuff like that.
Yeah.
And he's a complete phony. Everybody knows it that knows him, and yet he's out there doing that. And that's just the cynicism with which they went after her. I mean, that was just so ugly and so awful. And by the way, she withdrew her nomination yesterday.
Yes, she did.
And it wasn't just him. Unfortunately, there were a bunch of Democrats who decided they couldn't vote for her either, not because she's a commie, but because, well, maybe it's because she's a commie, but the ostensible reason is because she's written some stuff about being a little too tough on the banks.
Yep.
And they didn't like that.
That's right.
So, you know, again, you know, so of course that makes her a communist. And the whole thing was just, it was so ugly, so repulsive, so reminiscent of, you know, that kind of creepy, you know, anti-Red Scare stuff that went on during the 1940s and 50s in this country. And yet here we are. There is no Communist Party in the United States anymore. I mean, my God, what are they talking about? But, and besides which, you know, I mean, that was the last administration that had, you know, communist Russians crawling all over, you know, I mean, they weren't communists either, but I'm just saying that to be hyperbolic, you know, crawling all over their campaign. And he was over there sucking up to Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping in China.
Yep.
I mean, this is, you know, the whole, again, it's projection, right? I mean, they're basically turning all this, what they did.
And pointing fingers at the saying, Democrats. Look what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. I mean, it's very, very, very difficult to counter. And I think what we're seeing here, and I mean, this is very scary because we don't have any time to waste. Trump is going to run again. And all these Trumpers and Trumpets who are, you know, doing their campaigns, you know, wrapping themselves naked around, you know, AR-15s in their campaign ads.
Oh, my God.
All these people are running for office, and they may very well win. And Trump is definitely going to run. And what the Democrats are discovering that just, you know, doing good stuff
isn't getting
in there and really trying and really earnestly caring about real people, while absolutely necessary in order to save the country, is not going to help them electorally if they don't do something about the assault on our democracy. And, you know, to me, this is the thing. I just, if you want to put your thumb on something and really lean hard and kick ass, it has to be on the, you know, the pro-democracy legislation that's in the Congress and working across the board, you know, through the states to try and put a stop to this assault on the electoral system.
Right.
And I see zero energy for doing that. And that is something, I mean, I don't know, you read this thing, probably many people who are listening read this thing in the Atlantic this week by Barton Gellman.
I mean,
that one sent chills down my spine.
Yep.
I don't know about you.
Yes, and I opened the show today by saying, if you didn't read it, I put a link up to it yesterday where I posted yesterday's show. If you haven't yet read it, do it now. It's a long article, but you must.
You can even listen to it, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
They have it, yeah. So if you don't want to, you know, sit there and read, put it on when you're in the car or something.
Right.
And listen to the whole thing, because, I mean, it is what he did was, and these are not things, none of it is something that we didn't know, right? I mean, we knew this, but what he does is put it all together and sort of, you know, weave the tapestry of this assault on democracy fully so that you can really understand just how dangerous, how threatening this thing really is. And it's happening from a number of different directions. And I'll tell you, Nicole, this is the thing. I mean, you know, Democrats will be Democrats. We know it. We, you know, mm-hmm. you and I have been talking about this for decades now.
Yep.
But this kind of, you know, torpor or just kind of, you know, the complacency about what is happening in terms of the electoral system and this assault on democracy, this is something I just do not understand. I keep hearing sort of, you know, around in, you know, around and about in my travels that, you know, people are saying, well, you know, we just really have to overwhelm them at the polls.
Ay, ay, ay.
Like, what
oh
are
my
you
God.
Talking about? You
know? It doesn't matter. I mean, they can say
we've got to deliver those kitchen table issues, and then everybody will come out. They'll be so happy and grateful that they'll vote in such huge numbers that they just can't steal it. I'm going, are you seeing
the way they're setting it up? They can steal it. It does. It's not
yes.
about the numbers. We saw that the way they set it up in the 2020 election. They're installing their own people to run the election offices that had always been nonpartisan and giving them the power to say, this seems just fishy. We don't trust these results, so we're going to throw them out and put our own electors in, and they will decide who won.
That's absolutely the case.
I know.
And by the way, this is a thing that, you know, people have known about this for a long time. This is, you know, Trump didn't come up with this. This comes out of the Federalist Society, the conservative legal movement, which if you go back to Bush versus Gore, you know, that's kind of the seminal moment when we saw what these Republicans were really capable of, right?
Yep.
And we saw the Supreme Court do its worst. William Rehnquist and Antonin Scalia wrote a concurrence in that opinion. And in there, they talked about this thing called the independent state legislature concept, you know, constitutional concept. They made that point then, that the state legislatures have a right to overturn elections.
Wow.
That there's nothing in the Constitution stopping them from doing that. And in order to change that, in their view, it would take a constitutional amendment, which, as we know, in our current situation, is virtually impossible.
Uh-huh.
So they had that going for a long time. That's been bubbling up and percolating in right-wing legal circles for a very long time. Well, that now, you know, Trump didn't come up with it, of course, you know, but somebody whispered it in his ear, and he started talking about the state legislatures, and they were talking about it and changing the election rules. Do state secretaries of state have a right to change the election rules? Do state Supreme Courts have a right to change the election rules? And it all came back to this simple concept. No, because in the Constitution, it says that the state legislatures have the ability to choose the mode of electors, right?
Right.
So somehow that's been extrapolated to mean that they have a right to decide elections, essentially. Now, what's going to happen is that the big test will be whether or not this means that it clearly is supposed to mean, which is that they decide how the electors are chosen, right? They decide whether you just pick them out of a hat or whether or not they're people delegates or, you know, whatever. It doesn't mean that you choose their votes, right?
Right.
I mean,
that's
ridiculous. But what these conservative legal, you know, supposed, what do they call themselves, originalists believe, is that the state, you know, legislatures have the ultimate say over what the electors actually vote for. Now, that is highly, highly controversial, very contentious. And that is probably going to be something that we see go to the high court. And I have every reason to believe, based upon the rulings that we saw come out of the last election, where they didn't take a stand on Trump, whatever. They did take a stand on this. There were a number of opinions. There was a Wisconsin case. There was another one. There was that Texas case. There were a number of them where you could see the sort of outlines of at least some of the justices, you know, adhering to this concept of the state independent state legislature concept.
God.
So this is the kind of thing, you know, we're looking at this, and, you know, I don't think anybody's getting educated, and it is arcane and difficult to, you know, to convey. I'm sure somebody with more, you know, erudite legal background than I could do it better than I just did. But nonetheless,
but they're not.
It is out there and nobody knows about it. And, you know, and that's just one, you know, but that's a big one. It's really, really big because they're going to try it next time. Believe me.
They're going to try everything.
That is going to happen.
They've been plotting and planning and they're throwing everything against the wall to see what sticks. The only upside I see is that the different factions are starting to turn on each other. Like Steve Bannon and Trump are now warring. Lynn Wood, or whatever his name is, is turned on the other ones. And so, you know, maybe they'll just eat each other, you know, when Republicans eat their own.
Crenshaw going after Marjorie Taylor Greene. That was kind of a surprise because he's just as bad as she is, really.
That's right.
But, you know, that kind of infighting, I agree with you. And I certainly hope that Democrats aren't just sitting around going, well, they're going to, you know, they'll implode because they're going after each other. That would be a very, very bad plan. However, it may be for people like you and me, as we're observing this and trying to, you know, who don't have the power to do anything, it may be our only hope or our best hope. And there is a good chance that it's going to happen because, you know, Trump has professionalized this now in a way. They've got some much better legal people working on all these things around the country than, you know, that Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani. you know, and they certainly have a much more thought out, you know, coup agenda and strategy than they had in 2020. But nonetheless, there is, you know, there is the fact that, you know, it's still Trump. It's still these radical Republican, you know, weirdos like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and, you know, Paul Gosar.
Madison Cawthorn.
I know. And the ones who are there running and the ones who Trump is endorsing are in that mold.
That's right.
So, you know, it's possible that there aren't enough people out there that really love that stuff. And there are plenty. Tens of millions of these people love them some Marjorie Taylor Greene. You know, they love that stuff. But it's possible that there aren't enough to really put them into power. And then, of course, there's also the fact that, you know, maybe Donald Trump, I mean, he isn't a young man. And I think an awful lot of people are just sitting there, you know, hoping that he you know, somehow passes in his sleep. Because, you know, if he could be, you know, not that, you know, you wish that on anyone, but Trump is of a certain age.
That's right.
So, you know, it's certainly a possibility that that could happen.
But COVID, he got COVID and apparently it was bad. What, you know, why did he serve? Oh, because he got the special drugs.
I'll tell you. Yeah. I mean, that was another thing in Meadows' book. He calls up the head of the pharmaceutical company that does Regeneron, monoclonal antibodies. And he was the first person in America outside the trial to get them, you know, and then he got that also for his pals, Chris Christie and Ben Carson and others who he no doubt gave COVID to.
Yep.
They were, you know, he gave it to them and then they went in the hospital and he got that for them. And, you know, nobody else got it. Remember, he came out and said, I want everyone to have this. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really worked on that.
Oh, yeah.
Really worked on that.
Yes.
You know? In fact, the whole thing about Meadows' book is just, I mean, I don't expect anybody to read it because it's just, it's awful. And he's a terrible writer, or whoever his ghostwriter is a terrible writer. And it's just so full of this obsequious, sycophantic blech about Trump being this, he's a saint and a Superman.
Oh,
and he's just the most generous, wonderful person in the whole world. Except, you know, through the whole thing, you're seeing these glimpses because Meadows isn't the sharpest, you know, tool in the shed.
Right.
He doesn't realize what he's saying, what he's revealing about his God, Trump.
Well, did you hear what just happened today with Meadows? He didn't show up. He was supposed to testify, right? And so Pelosi or whoever said, all right, he's going to be held in contempt. We're going to file criminal contempt charges. Well, this just broke just moments before I went on the air. Mark Meadows, facing an imminent threat of criminal contempt of Congress charges, is suing Speaker Nancy Pelosi and members of the January 6th panel. The former White House chief of staff has filed legal action against Pelosi, according to court records. As the January 6th select panel prepares to take action against him, Meadows has claimed that he can't discuss matters that could be covered by executive privilege. But the panel has rejected that claim, noting that Joe Biden has not asserted privilege to block Meadows' testimony. A spokesman for the January 6th panel declined to comment. So He already said he was going to cooperate. He'll apparently turned over tons of documents. And then his book comes out and Trump goes ballistic on him. And he's like, all of a sudden, no, my book is fake news and I'm not cooperating anymore.
Right. Well, and exactly. I mean, that's, I wrote about that for Salon. I wrote about Meadows this morning for my Salon column. And that's exactly what I thought was that, of course, what happened was, and Trump blurbed the book, you know, it's fantastic. You should get it for Christmas.
Because he didn't read it because he doesn't read.
He doesn't read. And for some reason, just assumed that Meadows, I mean, what I wrote, I guess, I mean, it's clear that Meadows doesn't really know Donald Trump. And Donald Trump doesn't really know Mark Meadows, because Meadows somehow didn't realize that Trump was going to be absolutely apeshit when he heard that he was described as this frail man who couldn't lift a 10-pound briefcase. And right. He was walking around with red streaks in his eyes and could barely lift his head. I mean, this is, of course, Trump was going to have a huge problem with that. And not to mention the problem with admitting that they covered up the fact that he was exposing everybody in sight to COVID, including Joe Biden.
Right.
So, you know, Trump apparently didn't think Meadows would do such a thing to him. And Meadows, meanwhile, obviously didn't think that Trump would get upset by it. So, you know, these are people who were living. I mean, Trump liked Meadows because he was, you know, a bootlicker extraordinaire.
Yep.
And Trump and Meadows worships Trump and, you know, came to believe his own delusion about the man. He didn't realize who he was dealing with. So now I think that once that happened, I do think it's just as you said. That Trump, you know, brought the hammer down.
Yeah.
He said, no, you're not, you know, because I think he thought that Meadows could go in and spar with those committee, you know, sharp committee lawyers like Jimmy Raskin and Adam.
Right.
And that Mark Meadows, who, again, not the sharpest tool, wouldn't get himself into trouble. But, you know, little did anybody realize, and I think this is one of the big revelations of the week, they've subpoenaed all the phone records.
Right.
Of all these people. And because of that, they know who was talking to who on those days. And that means that leaves everybody open to perjury charges, right? I mean, they come in and say, oh, no, I never said a word. You know, I didn't call so-and-so. I didn't know anything. And then it turns out that Meadows has turned over a boatload of stuff that's actually pretty incriminating already. And in fact, they revealed some of that today in that, you know, in that, you know, it's a statement, that release that the committee gave out.
Right.
And Meadows, all that they're saying, look, you gave us these documents. We'd like to ask you some questions about the documents you gave us. And he's saying no.
Right.
Yeah, it's protected by executive privilege. So his documents aren't protected, but I guess his thoughts are. I don't know how that can be. So, and by the way, this is another funny thing. I'll just, you know, wind up here. He said that, you know, he apparently it's been revealed now that he did a whole bunch of this work on his own personal phone, which he's refusing to turn over.
Uh-oh.
Because it's personal. And I just, you know, I just keep hearing blaring in my head, butter emails, her emails. Right. Emails.
Of course. Of course. Oh, my God. You know, and it goes on and on. We could keep going all day. I did a show on Monday. I spoke to a woman named Diane Archer, who runs an organization called Just Care USA. And this is regarding this new, if you watch television, you're seeing the ads for Medicare Advantage. Well, thankfully, the open enrollment period ended yesterday. But those ads will continue because there's another period from January through March where you can still make changes. But there's another privatization scheme for Medicare that was implemented in the last few months of the former guy's administration. And for whatever reason, the Biden administration is continuing it. It's called direct contracting. So I asked Diane Archer about this the other day. And right before you came on, I got a call from a listener in Miami who asked, you know what? It wasn't even about this. Never mind. I'll talk about that later. That was a different caller. The thing that he asked about was with Manchin and Sinema holding up legislation, why couldn't Bernie Sanders or Rand Paul or Mike Lee yesterday have blocked the NDAA? If one senator can block a bill, why couldn't they have stopped that from going through?
Well, you know, they don't play the same kind of hardball game. They just don't. And if certainly the Republicans you just mentioned, Mike Lee and Rand Paul, don't. They like to make big speeches, but they don't do anything.
Right.
And I guess, you know, Bernie doesn't want to rock the boat because he's trying to get this, you know, his
other
big bill through.
Yep.
And you just end up with this dynamic, and it happens over and over again. And it really, when it comes right down to it, the big problem is what we talked about at the beginning, which is that Democrats want to do things.
Yep.
They have an agenda. They have.
Yep.
They want to pass legislation. They want to actually govern the country. And Republicans don't want to do anything like that. Their job there is to try and roll back anything Democrats have done in the past and basically, you know, deliver whatever is necessary for their, you know, their wealthy patrons.
Yeah.
And culture war. I mean, it's to stay in power for the sake of staying in power. That's all the culture war does, right? Because, you know, that's out of their hands. But they want to play that. So this dynamic is always a problem. I mean, going back to Obamacare and, you know, any kind of big legislation that the Democrats ever try to do, we end up in this same position. And it's really, really difficult. And I have to say that one of the things that's most disappointing to me is the fact that the press is just reverted. Like the last 5 years didn't happen.
Right.
And
right.
That's why that
Dana Milbank column is, I'm going to share that. I'll post that on the blog today. But you know what, since I brought it up, let me just answer this question. I think it was somebody in the chat room who asked this. So have you heard about this, Digby, the direct contracting thing? I'm going to send you an article. I sent it to Howie last week. It's frightening. Basically, it's like Medicare Advantage, but the next level. So it doesn't even have to be a health insurance company or a healthcare provider who does one of these direct contracting deals, but you can be placed in. So, for instance, United Healthcare, I understand, has one of these things, and they are just moving some of their clients, their Medicare clients, into this program, and you have no say in the matter. So somebody asked, well, how do you know if you've been put into it? Yes, it was Cynthia in the other chat room. And so I wrote to Diane Archer, the guest who was on with me Monday, and asked her, how can people find out if they've been put into one of these arrangements? And here's how she answered me. She said they should receive a letter from the direct contracting entity, but Lord knows whether they'll throw it out, assuming it's junk. And I have a copy of one letter, and it says nothing helpful. They should assume they are not for now, as it is currently only affecting a very small cohort of people to our knowledge. But just know that this is out there. And I'm going to send you this article. It was in Common Dreams the other day. And it's a scam taking the next step past Medicare Advantage to privatize Medicare.
And what do these contractors, I mean, what is their, are they like middlemen between? No,
they are contracting to handle your healthcare needs, and they get paid a set amount through CMS for each patient. Whatever they don't spend on that patient's care, they pocket.
No.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yep.
That's terrible.
Yep.
Every bad incentive in that.
Every
How
bad
did
incentive
that get through.
It was instituted during the final months of Trump's administration, and for some reason, the Biden administration
is
keeping it going. It's not legislation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
well, see, that's the kind of stuff that makes people cynical about politics. You know, I mean, you can't help it. I mean, anybody, even if you are a good, earnest, you know, liberal who, you know, believes in the, you know, in self-governance and the idea that you can do good things. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that just makes you go, oh, God, what's the point?
Like,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's terrible.
What's the point?
Especially preying on old people who won't know that it's happening to them.
Exactly. Because they don't tell you. You just are placed in one of these plans. You know, I was doing a whole lot of research on the whole Medicare and Medicare Advantage thing. And do you know that if you're in a Medicare Advantage plan, because obviously it's cheaper, if you'd go traditional Medicare and get the Medicare gap policy, that's expensive. But still, you're not dealing with a for-profit company who's telling you we're not approving that procedure or that medication. If it's if you are on Medicare and you're seeing a provider who takes Medicare, you're covered, and it's all covered. But then you also have to get the Part D, the drug coverage, which isn't included, and it gets very expensive. So people, more and more people have Medicare Advantage. They're advertising it every time you turn on the TV, and it's like it's the best thing ever. Not only do you get your health care and you get a gym membership and we'll buy you food and we'll give you money and we'll and William Shatner will come to your house and he'll right and he'll take you up to, out into outer space. I mean, whatever you want, just come on with us. That they too operate the same way. They get paid a fee from Medicare for to administer your health care, and what they don't spend on you, they get to keep. It's it's insane.
Yeah, I think they call that savings, don't they?
They call that savings.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So all the while we're thinking, great, you know, Bernie's on the case. They're pushing Medicare for all and lower the Medicare eligibility age. Well, now I'm saying, you know what? Let it stretch out a little longer. I've got 3 years. Wait, get it fixed. But if it keeps going down this road, if the Republicans win back control of Congress and then the White House, this is never going to come back. We are never going to have control over Medicare and our healthcare system. It's gone forever.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, then that's the tip of the iceberg.
You know, what
we have will be gone, and any hope of improvement will be gone. And I mean, I have just no doubt about that. We're dealing with it's no longer a political party, really. I mean, this is something else. It's a different entity with the Republicans, and you know, whether Donald Trump's at the head of it or not, I think that the transition has already been made. He's a symptom. He's not a cause. And we're dealing with something that's very, very, very malignant. And I don't, you know, I wish that I saw more recognition of that. I'm glad to see some people in the press talking about it, like Milbank or like the Barton Gellman piece
that's
or whatever.
Right.
You know, I mean, maybe that has helped. Maybe that will shake loose some of this complacency. But the way, you know, you watch these people in the Senate, particularly in the Senate, where they're just walking around, all good. You know, you just don't get any sense of urgency.
None.
I mean, you do from some people. You know, I mean, there are some people. Brian Schatz is one.
Yeah, the progressives.
Chris Murphy. You know, but for the most part, you know, there's just this kind of ha ha ha. You know, and they'll pat each other on the back and doing that. And I'm just going, what world are you people?
And they're
going
to be like, look, we got the debt ceiling done. We're getting this done. The Build Back Better will probably not be done before Christmas. And they're making sure that they're all out of there because God knows they got to get home for Christmas. They can't have to be stuck in D.C. And by the way, they funded the government and they got the debt ceiling and they got the NDAA. Well, I guess they don't have to stick around through the holidays because that's what's important to them. And that should frighten everybody.
Exactly. Ugh. And it's, you know, the idea that, I mean, and time is wasting. I mean, we are going, you know, we have a new election year coming up just in a month.
And
suddenly we're back in the campaign.
Right. And so Steve Bannon, you know, says, I'm not testifying, goes to court. They're going to take him up on trial. They, you know, he asked for a trial date in October. Prosecution wanted April, so they make it July. Well, that's their strategy, to just delay and stretch it out and stretch it out, that they get back control of Congress and the investigation ends. Done. Nothing to look at here.
Absolutely. It'll be done, you know, instantly. And I'm really hoping that the January 6th committee is not falling for that. But they're not going to get anything out of Steve Bannon.
Nope.
That, I don't think any information. This is more of a kind of a shot across the bow that, yes, we will prosecute you for not cooperating. And Bannon's getting what he wants out of it. He's getting a lot of attention.
Oh, yeah.
He's making a lot of money. And he would love to have – he'll love having the trial in July. I think that really worked out well for him.
Yeah.
Because in July, you're just the campaign's just really getting rolling, and it'll be a real – you know, it'll be a total shit show.
Right. And then the month of August, Congress is all back in their districts campaigning.
Exactly.
So it's the lead-in to the final stretch towards the November election.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and so he gets, now maybe that, you know, maybe it won't work out and he'll make a fool of himself. It is possible. You know, we're all counting on that, you know, they're all, but, and they will. No, they always do make fools of themselves. That part is not wrong. What is wrong is that we think that, you know, a critical mass of the American public is going to be moved by the fact that they're clowns and are making fools of themselves. I think what's happened is people have become inured to that.
Yes.
That's become politics. So they're not going to, you know, the fact that these people are doing these things. I mean, you see, I mean, look at the stuff that Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and the rest are doing.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's horrifying. And they're saying things that are just crazy stuff. I mean, really, literally nuts that you hear coming out of the mouths of these people. And, you know, they've got huge followings. They are massive fundraisers. They are raising more money than anybody with this stuff.
I know.
The main reason why they're being, you know, indulged, because they're good for the party. They're
exactly
bringing in lots of money.
But the thing is, on the Democratic side, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Nancy Pelosi is not going to do anything about Lauren Boebert's comments about Ilhan Omar.
Doesn't she, look that way.
Right? Nothing. Because if she does go after her and censure her or remove her from committees or whatever, they'll use that to fundraise. And they'll get even more traction out of it.
Yep.
If they don't do anything about it, it says they can get away with this shit. They can call one of our sitting members of Congress a terrorist and defame her and demean her. And nothing will be done. It's a lose-lose. No matter how you look at it, they've got the Republicans, today's Republican Party, has the Democratic Party on the run, and it's sickening.
It is. Well, it's terrifying. You know, it's terrifying because it really is a problem. I mean, it is an actual conundrum. It isn't just a matter of being gutless, although that's certainly a factor.
Yep.
It's also a matter of, you know, sort of strategic intelligence. I mean, you have to look at what the consequences of doing things are that could make things worse. And, you know, so you're constantly sort of having to balance those things. I mean, and a lot of, you know, I mean, personally, I think she should go ahead and just, you know, get Boebert, you know, let her lose her committee.
Yep.
You know,
so do I.
And just do it.
Just do it.
Don't even, you know, don't make a big deal of it.
Nope.
Just get in there and say, that's it for you. You did this and you're out.
Yep.
Because they've already done it
with
Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar. So whatever consequences they're going to suffer politically from that, if the Republicans take over, I mean, you know, the first things that are going to happen. If Republicans take over the House, first of all, impeachment. I mean,
of course,
that goes without saying.
Right.
And then they're going to, you know, strip everybody
of their committees and everything
committee
else.
Assignments. I mean, I think maybe there will be no Democrats allowed to be on any
committee.
I wouldn't be surprised to see that.
Nor would I.
So, you know, I mean, they're going to, you know, go nuclear. And that's already baked in. I mean, nothing Pelosi does now will change that. That's going to happen. The fundraising is a problem because, you know, everybody needs money, and there is an off chance that Democrats could retain the House. It may be possible that they could do it, and you don't
want to
not
they could
be
retain
able to
both
do it because of money.
Right. Right. Exactly.
You know. You know, it's a tough thing. Yeah, anyway,
it's all tough. It's all. We need a deep breath. I don't know how we're going to get through this. All I say is find another diversion. Find something
definitely
to watch the Beatles thing on Disney Plus. Have you seen that? It's brilliant.
Yeah, I have. It's fantastic.
I have Ben Harper on the show on Friday talking music, playing music.
Because
I need to not just be laser focused on politics because it will kill me. And so
I need to
take care of our psyches. And that means painting or listening to music or doing something else.
Yep.
I'm not saying tune it out. I'm not saying don't pay attention, but it can't be all consuming because it will be all consuming.
Right. Have some diversions.
Exactly.
I mean, absolutely. Gardening or cooking or, you know, something, or, you know, doing good works.
That's right.
If you feel like you want to go out and, you know, do some charity work or something. Because it's important to kind of ground yourself in real life at the moment. And it also is important because it reminds you of the stakes. We spend way too much time online, way too much time watching these screens. And, you know, you need to have, you know, your hands involved in something besides typing in order to sort of remember why this stuff is important. Because there's a certain abstraction, you know, abstract quality to the way we to the way we live politics in the internet age.
Yep.
And it's important to remember that it's actual people, yourself and your family and everybody else.
That's right. And I hate to say it, the internet has been such an integral part of our lives. I couldn't do my job without it. It's the only reason I'm able to talk to you. but I also think the internet is responsible for this rise of right-wing crazy, because they're now people who are isolated in the middle of nowhere, who were shut in during the pandemic, spent hours and days and weeks and months online finding other crazy fringe people like them and organizing. And that's how they were able to do this. Without the internet, this never would have happened.
There is no doubt about it. I mean, for all the upside of the internet, and there's plenty.
Yep.
The access to information, education, all of that, this downside and what we're finding, and also just the strange sort of psychological impact it has. I mean, there's an addictive quality, which I know because I've been subject to it. it can draw you in ways that, you didn't ever predict about yourself. And it's happening to an awful lot of people. And what the right is doing, I think, and they're doing this very consciously, is providing that stuff. They are giving it to them. They're giving them something to hang on to. And it's, you hear these stories of these QAnon people or even just, hardcore Trumpers. And, they're being brainwashed. I mean, that's just
without a doubt.
I don't know. That's a subject for a whole other show. what to do about that stuff.
No, I've done it too. There's a book, The Brainwashing of My Dad, about this woman whose father was brainwashed by Fox. And he, used to be a good Democrat, and he went off the deep end. And it happens. And I think that's what happened to Trump. Anyway, Digby, I've kept you way into overtime.
Oh, it was fun. I enjoyed it. I'm glad we got to have a full conversation.
Yes, me too. It was necessary. Our talks are so helpful to me because all this shit is building up and we're able to get it out. So hopefully it was cathartic.
It's a vent, which is nice. I hope anybody who's listening got a sort of a vicarious vent out of it as well.
I hope so too. Thank you, Digby. Well, I'll be talking to you again soon. Keep up the great work.
Digby'sblog.net.
And thank you as always. Take care.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye bye.
The fabulous Digby, everybody. All right. And now we're done, obviously. Tomorrow, Howie Klein's going to be here. Friday, Ben Harper. We taped it yesterday. We just had a great hang, I really hope you'll listen on Friday. I hope you know Ben's music. If not, check him out. He's all over YouTube. There's tons of stuff there. Ben Harper, he's going to be my guest on Friday, probably for the most of the hour, because we talked for a long time. And it was a treat for me. Hopefully it will be for you, too. All right. Until tomorrow. Oh, this I even have yesterday's What's News up here. Man, oh man, oh man. Sometimes I am just not on top of things. So in 1 second, I will leave you with today's news, and I will see you back here mañana. Thanks for listening, everybody. Here we go. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The House was busy Tuesday evening, passing two key pieces of legislation. First, a new debt ceiling plan with one lone Republican Representative Adam Kinzinger joining all of the Democrats in voting to raise the country's borrowing limit and avoid a disastrous default later this month. It'll now be taken up by the Senate, where Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell have reportedly reached a deal to let Democrats raise the debt ceiling without any Republican votes. Here's how it will allegedly work. The Senate votes on this procedural motion to allow the debt ceiling increase to pass by simple majority, but that still needs 60 votes to pass. McConnell reportedly is confident 10 Republicans will support it. If that measure is approved, then the Senate takes another vote to pass an increase to the debt ceiling with a simple majority, avoiding the threat of a Republican filibuster. Confused? Of course. Then there was the annual National Defense Authorization Act, which also made it through the House, this one with strong bipartisan support. The bill sets the policy agenda and authorizes $768 billion in funding for the Department of Defense for 1 year. This year's version also calls for an independent review of the war in Afghanistan and changes how the military handles sexual assault and harassment. It also includes a 2.7% pay increase for military service members and Defense Department civilian employees. Now the bill goes to the Senate, which is expected to pass it and send it to President Biden for his signature before the end of the year. One measure included in that massive spending bill is a $650 million weapons sale to Saudi Arabia. It passed despite opposition over human rights and national security concerns from an odd coalition, Senators Bernie Sanders, Rand Paul, and Mike Lee. Moving on to the committee investigating what happened on January 6th, and former Trump White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, who's nothing if not indecisive and cowardly. After first saying he wouldn't comply with a subpoena from the committee, he reacted to the indictment of Steve Bannon for doing just that and reversed his decision and said he would cooperate. But now, after the former guy criticized Meadows and the secrets he spilled in his new book, he's flip-flopping again. And he said he will not cooperate at today's scheduled deposition. Meadows' reversal means that he's once again in danger of being held in contempt of Congress and could face jail time, a punishment that the committee says they are not afraid to pursue, and in fact will pursue contempt of Congress charges if he doesn't comply today. President Biden met with Russian President Vladimir Putin in a video call on Tuesday and reportedly warned him that the United States and its allies would impose harsh sanctions if Russia invades Ukraine. The call came as Russia is gathering troops near the border with Ukraine and fears mount that Russia plans to invade. Of course, Moscow denies those reports. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said Biden told Putin that the U.S. was prepared to hit Russia harder economically than it did in an unsuccessful 2014 attempt to stop Russia from annexing Crimea. The Kremlin described the conversation as, quote, candid and businesslike, saying Putin told Biden that NATO was the one, quote, making dangerous attempts to expand its presence on the Ukrainian territory and near Russia's borders. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy on Tuesday issued a public health advisory calling for action to address a looming youth mental health crisis that's been made worse by the coronavirus outbreak. Since the pandemic hit in early 2020, symptoms of depression and anxiety have doubled. A quarter of young people are now experiencing symptoms of depression, 20% showing signs of anxiety. The numbers are daunting. Early this year, emergency department visits for suspected suicide attempts were up by 51% for adolescent girls and 4% higher for adolescent boys compared with the same period 2 years ago. President Biden's nominee to head the office of the Comptroller of Currency, a woman named Sally Omarova, withdrew her nomination after smear from Republicans that she was a communist. No, Joseph McCarthy isn't back, but his ghost seems to have inhabited some senators, including John Kennedy from Louisiana.
I don't mean any disrespect. I don't know whether to call you professor or comrade.
President Biden condemned Republicans for what he described as, quote, inappropriate personal attacks that were unfair to Professor Omarova and, quote, far beyond the pale. Biden said she would have brought invaluable insight to the position overseeing the U.S. banking system because she is, quote, a strong advocate for consumers and a staunch defender of the safety and soundness of our financial system. What a shame. From the "it's not only here" category, French authorities have released a man held as a suspect in the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, blaming an identity mix-up. Seriously, the announcement came almost 30 hours after French authorities detained a Saudi citizen at Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris on an outstanding Turkish warrant. The suspect was thought to be a Saudi wanted in connection with the murder of Khashoggi, who was dismembered in Istanbul 3 years ago. An identity mix-up? Opening arguments start Wednesday in the trial of Kim Potter. She's the former cop charged in the killing of Dante Wright. Remember, she said she mistook her service revolver for her taser. This trial will be in the same courtroom as the trial of Derek Chauvin for the killing of George Floyd earlier this year. And finally, we have a manatee problem here in Florida. State environmental officials are unveiling a test proposal this week to feed the manatees that are starving as a result of man-made pollution. This isn't usually done with any wild animal, but the situation has become such an emergency that they have to do something. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.